Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.
When I was in Israel a few weeks ago, we went to a memorial service and I heard Aviva Siegel speaking. It was incredibly moving, but incredibly difficult to hear the stories because although we talk a lot about the hostages, we raise awareness for the plight of those that are still in Gaza, there's a little bit of a distance, and that distance somehow makes it easier. Well, Aviva has very kindly agreed to speak to us and to tell us her story. Aviva Siegel, a very good morning, and thank you for having the courage to chat to us this morning.
Thank you for having me. Good morning to everybody.
Good morning. So, if you could just give us a sense of, were you living on a kibbutz, you and your husband, Keith? Give us the background as to where you were and what happened leading up and on October the 7th.
Okay, so Keith and I live on Kibbutz Kfar Aza, and we were both kidnapped together from our little room that's like a little shelter, and we thought we were safe there, but we weren't. It all started at 6:30 in the morning. We were woken up with the first alarm, and we ran, and we felt that something different was happening because it was very noisy. There were lots and lots and lots of rockets coming from Gaza, and we can hear them because we're very close to Gaza. But we couldn't imagine in our dreams to go through what we went through that day and what we went through and that Keith is still going through because he's still in Gaza. So we were woken up and we just sat in a little shelter. We locked the window and we locked the door, and we felt like we were protected. And after a short while, we understood that there are terrorists on the kibbutz. And I was very, very, very scared. And so was Keith. And after a short while, we started hearing the Arabic outside. They were shouting at each other. And it sounded like there was like a party outside, the way they were just acting. And then we looked at each other and we said, wow. We can hear them so close. They started shooting the house, and we heard them. And then they started walking inside, and next to the room that we were in, we could hear them walking and talking and shouting. They just opened the door like any door and shoved themselves inside. They must have been about 15 terrorists. They started shooting at us. And what saved us is that Keith put his head on his knees, so he didn't try to hit them or anything. I just stood up and screamed, and it was very, very, very scary. They were shouting.
So they came into the safe room and they dragged you out of there, or this was happening whilst you were in that safe room.
No, we were sitting inside, and when they opened the door, they dragged us out in a brutal way. And they took us to Gaza in Keith's car. And they shot us. They pushed us. They pulled my hair.
Aviva, if you don't mind me asking, I know it's a rude question. How old are you and how old is Keith?
Keith is 64.
Right.
And I'm 63.
Right.
And they pushed Keith and broke his ribs. And that's how we arrived in Gaza in such a brutal way. They took us down to a tunnel that you could hardly breathe there. And they were just waiting for us. They were so happy. The people on Gaza were waiting for us and shouting Allahu Akbar and shooting in the air. And Keith and I felt at that moment that it's the end of the world. We're going to die. And that was the beginning. We were in a complete and utterly shock.
And Aviva, how long did it take to get, what did they put you in? A car, a truck, how did they get you to Gaza?
They took us in Keith's car. They found Keith's keys.
Right.
And they just drove us in Keith's car.
And it was easy. There was no one stopping them from Kfar Aza into Gaza. They could just drive.
There were millions of them. Nobody stopped them. We saw them on the way. They were outside our house. 15 of them stepped into the house while they took us. And there were lots of them like just walking around the kibbutz. I didn't see anybody that was trying to protect us or anything. It was just them shouting and happy and smiling while we were just so, so scared in such a brutal way.
It's so frightening. And then you're taken to Gaza. People are cheering when you get there. And it's, again, celebratory in a way through this trauma and murder of people on Kfar Aza and other parts, kidnapping, people are cheering. You're then taken in to a tunnel that you said,
yeah.
What was it, very dusty, that you could breathe in there?
Well, some of the places you have to like crawl in. And it's very, very dark and moisty, and you don't feel that there's air. And while we arrived, a family from Kfar Aza, a mother and her three kids, arrived about 5 minutes later. Mm. And when they walked in, she was saying to us that they killed her husband in front of her eyes. And her daughter fainted while they came into their house. And while she fainted, they told her to wake her up. And she wasn't able to wake up. She didn't wake up. So they just shot her in the face in front of her mother and the three other kids. And that's how they came, knowing that their father that they love and their sister that they love was just shot in front of them. Mm. What happened on that day was beyond humanity. Kfar Aza lost 64 people. And they, my neighbors, I know them. I've been living on Kibbutz Kfar Aza for more than 42 years. And in such a brutal way, one of the families were found burnt and hugging. One of the families, they left the two babies that are 9 months old, and they just killed the parents while the babies were there for at least 20 hours without nobody to look after them. Lots of mothers were just raped in front of the kids and their husbands, and then was killed, and they shot them in front of their family. People were burnt alive. What happened was beyond anybody that can any hear a story. It wasn't just a war. It was beyond a war. They were so nasty and so brutal.
It is hell. That's the only thing only way we can describe it. Once you were in Gaza, you now go through these tunnels. You come across other hostages as well. Were you kept in one place or were you moved around?
Keith and I were moved 13 times, and so we were in tunnels and we were in houses. We were with the Hamas people, that the terrorists that took us. We were in a couple of their houses, and every place we went, they were brutal. They were rude. They took all the human rights away from us. We were starved while they ate in front of us. We were thirsty while we begged for water. We were in a tunnel one of the times that there was no oxygen at all for us. And they just left us there because it wasn't nice for them to be there because they didn't have oxygen. And they just left us there with no food and no water. And we were sure that we're going to die. We were just lying there trying to figure out how we're going to breathe because we couldn't feel that there was any oxygen. We thought we're going to die. I was there for 51 days and Keith is still there going through this hell. And it's too much for me to handle. To know what he's going through with these people, that they just starve you for hours, for days, and eat in front of you. They hit you. They threaten you with a gun. If you just move a little bit, you're not allowed to stand. You're not allowed to move. You're not allowed to talk. You need to keep quiet all the time. Sometimes you're allowed to whisper. You sit in the dark most of the time, even though we had cards. Most of the time we couldn't even play the cards because we couldn't see the numbers on the cards. And if you're eating, they just like switch the lights off so it's pitch dark. You can't even see what you're eating, and just a little bit of food. So you just want to eat a little bit more, but you can't see it. Yeah. One of the days they took Keith and they shaved his body, and he was so humiliated. And they made him as a joke. They just stood at him next to him and laughed because they thought he looked funny. They shaved him looking like an Arab. And so, Keith and I have been living on Kwaraza for more than 42 years, and we're peacemakers. We want good for everybody. We want good for every nation, everybody in the world. Every kid should not go through what they're going through. There's still kids in Gaza that are starved with the terrorists. Mm. We need to get them out as soon as possible. They're going through hell, and the world needs to understand it's not just a story. It's true. I was there. I saw one of the girls coming back after one of the terrorists touched her in intimate places, and she went through sexual abuse. I saw one of the girls being threatened by a gun and thrown on the floor, pulling her hair and handcuffed and being hit and beaten in front of me. And after that happened to her, I asked her, why didn't you scream? They would have stopped. And she said that she didn't want to give them the joy of her being hurt. Mm. And that's what we went through. One of the times Keith said one word, they came in and threatened him with a gun. If he says one more word, they'll kill him. And that was our life. We were threatened. We were humiliated. They used to dress the girls in very, very tight clothes and just stare at them. And I'm very worried about Keith, and I'm very worried about everybody.
How did you get through these 51 days at this level of abuse, humiliation, fear, deprivation? It's everything. It's every aspect of human cruelty was something. It was you endured. How are you even managing to have this conversation with me?
Well, I want to tell you that there were so many minutes that I wanted somebody just to kill me. Because it was so difficult. But I couldn't kill myself. And we were just in such a shock all of the time. When we weren't allowed, we had to keep quiet. We used to just like look at each other with our eyes. And that's the love that we gave each other, by looking at each other when we were threatened, because we weren't allowed to hug. We weren't allowed to cry. Wow. And it's just difficult. We just, you know.
And you were also a support for this young woman that you've mentioned. You were some support for her, weren't you? Because she was there alone.
When they did that to her, she was in the next room with us.
Right.
And the door was open. We didn't hear anything, but I knew, because when she came, I could see by her face that something, she was so, so scared after he touched her. And when she came back, I did give her a hug, and the terrorist just started screaming at me. And I told him, don't worry, I love her. But I didn't know at that minute. Only after a couple of hours, when she felt like she could tell us, she told us that he told her that if she ever says anything about it, he's going to kill her. And I am here coming back from Gaza, and I'm talking for the girls. I'm talking for Keith, and I'm not keeping quiet. I won't keep quiet until they will come back. We need the leaders of the world to understand they were chosen to be leaders, and they were chosen to be leaders to bring the world to be a good world. Keith is the most sweetest, loving person. He won't even kill a fly. He's vegan because he wants to keep all the animals alive.
Wow. It's
and he's there sitting in the corner like a rug.
When you were separate, when you were going to be released, did you know you were going to be released? Did Keith know what was happening?
No. It happened in 2 seconds. The terrorist came and said to me, "You tomorrow, Israel." And I looked at him and I said, "I'm not going anywhere without Keith." And I begged him. And I said, "I'm not going anywhere without Keith. Keith needs me." And he hardly let me go and say Keith was in the other room. He wasn't with me at that moment when he told me. They separated us. He was in a different room. And he wouldn't even let me go say goodbye to Keith. And I said, "No way." I pushed him and I went to Keith and I hugged him. And I said, "You be strong for me and I'll be strong for you." And I did not know that I'm going home at that moment. I didn't believe them. They used to lie to us all the time. Whenever they could, they lied. And I didn't believe them. The only minute I understood that I'm going home is when I met the first soldier. And Keith doesn't know that Shai, his son, my son, is still alive. We were sure that he was killed. And he doesn't know anything about what's happening in Israel. They used to tell us that there's no Israel anymore. And I believed them. They said that the whole world is bombing Israel. I believed them.
Did you have no sense at that stage that Israel was attacking Gaza? From where you were in the tunnels, what sense did you have of what was happening outside, if any?
We were taken most of the times to places that when they send the missiles to Israel, they send it from underneath the house. So the whole house moves, the ceiling moves, and you've got the feeling that the building is going to collapse on you and you're going to die all the time. So we used to hear that all the time, them sending the bombs to Israel. And we felt that Israel was bombing too, but we weren't sure if it was them bombing us or if it was Israel bombing us. Mm. We were closed in a room that was dark with no window open. And we couldn't know.
There were a couple of interviews afterwards with some of the survivors. I don't know if you were one of them that it was very clear, you know, that were told, were worrying about people left behind in Gaza. Were you interviewed afterwards? Were you one of them? I can't recall.
If I was interviewed for people that are still there?
No, by the press and when you came out of Gaza. Did you give any public statements at that point, knowing that obviously Keith is still inside? Or were you...
Sure. Sure. The minute I left Gaza, I've been talking wherever I can. I met Biden. I've been in 7 countries talking to everybody that maybe can help get Keith out and get the hostages out. There's kids that are still there, thrown in a little room, a dark room with no food, no water, with people that think that they can do everything they want to. They can touch girls when they feel like it. They can starve people when they want to. And lots of people ask me, "Weren't they a little bit better with you because you're older?" And the answer is no. They were brutal in the same way. They were rude. They were horrible. They were just disgusting. I used to look at them and tell myself they could be my grandchildren. And that's the way they're acting to me. No human should go through what I went through. And no human should be in Gaza and going through what they're going through now.
Aviva Siegel, I applaud your ability to speak out. I can't, it's hard for me to find the words to even speak to you. The horror of what you're describing, the fear, the worry about Keith, who is still there in the most terrible, terrible conditions. All I can tell you is we wish you strength, we wish Keith strength, and we will keep spreading the word, talking about this. The focus needs to be getting the hostages home. We've got to create world pressure. We've got to make this a key focus of the conversation. I wish you strength, and thank you very much. Thank you for all of us.
Thank you. Can I just say one more word? You know, I was born in South Africa. I was born in South Africa. I came to Israel when I was 9 years old. And I had a nanny. Her name was Priska, and I loved her. She was like a mom for me. And I always used to pray for all the people in South Africa, if they white or if they black, to have a good and a better life. And I want you and everybody to know that everybody in the world, if you, whatever, needs human rights, food, water, to able to talk, and not to just taken from your bed at night. We are innocent people, and Keith doesn't deserve it, and nobody deserves to be treated like that. And thank you very much.
Thank you, Aviva. That, certainly that has left me speechless.